Oh, good. You're here. I've been expecting you. Please, come inside. Let's sit down. So, you want to know about the struggle of women for the right to vote. You've certainly come to the right place. It was my life's work. Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't even introduced myself. I'm Elizabeth Cady Stanton. I was born in 1815, and among my life's passions was equal justice for women. I wasn't alone, of course. Many others took up that cause. But what began in my lifetime finally came to pass in 1920. Our story begins there, on a hot August night at the Hermitage Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee.
Mrs. Kath, the reporters won't leave. They know you're here.
Tell them we're in a meeting. Stare them down. You've gone to jail for the cause.
They're not police. They're worse. They're reporters. They're crowding the door. They're going to break it down.
Allow them in. We can't have them injured.
There she is.
Yes, here I am. Mrs. Carrie Kett, president of the National American Women's Suffrage Association, at your service.
You know you're not going to get this amendment passed.
What do you think was your biggest mistake? What would you have done differently?
Tomorrow, a special session will be held of the Tennessee State Legislature to ratify the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. That amendment states that the right to vote shall not be denied on account of sex. The vote is too close to call, so I will not comment any further.
What do you say to those men who think women may be capable of voting, but the country isn't ready for such a step?
Isn't ready? Gentlemen, this is 1920. The first Women's Rights Convention was held on July 19, 1848. The country has had 72 years to get used to the idea. Among us now, continuing the work of her late mother, is Harriet Stanton Blanche, the daughter of Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Harriet, say a few words to these gentlemen about your late mother.
I feel at this moment the spirit of my mother, her presence. She is with us. I know it.
So you're saying you believe in ghosts?
Can I get a quote on that?
Good night, gentlemen. Try not to damage the door any further on your way out.
I put it at 47 votes to ratify the 19th Amendment, 49 votes not to ratify. You're still 2 votes short.
Let the Tennessee state legislators actually vote first. Then I'll discuss the results with you.
An amendment to the Constitution has to be approved by 2/3 of the states. You lost both Delaware and Vermont. Connecticut refused to even hold a special session.
If we lose in Tennessee, we still have strong suffrage committees throughout the South. We will count on the progressive, forward-thinking men of Mississippi to carry the 19th Amendment to victory.
We just learned that the Mississippi State Legislature refused to hold a special session. Speaker of the House says it's a waste of his time, the taxpayers' money to even consider a vote. The Speaker feels the Constitution has enough amendments already.
You're lucky you got Tennessee.
Why can't you gentlemen write anything positive about our situation?
Can't think of much at this point. Do you now admit that having the strong support of the temperance movement was a mistake?
Nonsense. They're experienced organizers with chapters in every state.
Even here in this very hotel, in the midst of one of the most serious legislative debates in this country's history, there is a bar upstairs on the 8th floor. The state legislators and their lobbyist friends are drinking together. Who knows what pledges are given by men in such a condition?
All I ask is that you write something positive about our campaign. If you will excuse us, we still have a lot of work to do.
Let's go up to the 8th floor.
Find out what they're saying up there, huh?
Yeah, at least there we can get a decent drink.
That was terrible. No more press conferences. Next time, let them break down the door.
I apologize, Mrs. Kett. I shouldn't have said anything negative about the legislators.
It's not your fault. The press has never been supportive. The cartoons alone, oh, Lord.
If we lose this vote, we'll have to start all over again.
Wait, can you hear them? The anti-suffrage women holding a rally? Across the street from our headquarters. The nerve of those women.
No vote! No vote! No vote!
The suffragettes say they want women equal to men. And I say, why lower ourselves to such a standard? All decent women know politics is dirty and corrupt.
They say women shouldn't involve themselves in politics, but they match us rally for rally.
Why should women demand the right to be involved in such awful business? We can accomplish more for the world by placing ourselves above such behavior. Even now, during this time of serious debate, there's drinking going on upstairs in that hotel, a bar set up by lobbyists to influence the vote. All decent women say, close it down. We tell our legislators that the women of America don't want the vote. No vote!
No vote! No vote! No vote! No vote! No vote! No vote!
I wish my mother was here. She was so certain the world could change for the better. I don't have her confidence. She opened the door, but can we walk through it?
Doors can be opened by the most unlikely among us. The first door was opened by me. I was a child of 7 when I opened that door. I didn't know then what it would mean for the world. Now I do. It meant the old world was about to end and a new one begin.
I'll get the door. It's my turn.
No, it's not. Father, stop her. Elizabeth isn't waiting her turn.
Let Elizabeth open the door. She got there first.
Good evening. My name is Elizabeth Cady. Whom do you wish to see?
Please, little girl, I must see Judge Cady.
Mrs. Campbell, what are you doing here so late?
I apologize for disturbing you at home, Judge Cady, but this is a very urgent matter.
Please, come in.
You're supposed to open the door, step back, curtsy, and then speak. Can't you do anything properly?
I try to be proper, I do, but sometimes it's hard and it doesn't make sense.
Did you see her crying? There was another lady who came here crying yesterday. Why do ladies see Father and burst into tears? He's not that disagreeable.
They're going into the library. The door isn't shut completely. If we go up to it, we'll hear them.
That's spying.
You're right, it is. Isn't that exciting? Let's be spies.
Mrs. Campbell, allow me to express my sympathy for the loss of your husband. He was a fine man.
I came here directly from the courthouse. My farm is being sold. I only found out an hour ago.
A sale? Of your property? You didn't know about this.
That farm has been in my family for generations. I still live there. What can I do to stop it?
I regret to say nothing.
Are you certain of that?
The law is clear in these matters. Married women are not permitted to own property. When you married, your farm became your husband's. Now that he's passed away, it goes to your closest male relative, your son. The law presupposes that he will protect your interests.
Judge Cady, you know my circumstances. My son is feeble-minded. He's the one who needs to be protected, not I. I doubt he even knew what he was signing.
That's quite possible.
Judge Cady, I'm an old woman. All I ask is to live the rest of my days in my home. Why shouldn't I be granted that small measure of mercy? I look at all these law books in your library. Are they all filled with such cruel laws against women? What have women done to deserve such unfair treatment?
Tomorrow morning, I'll try to stop the deed from being filed. I'm afraid your son will have to be legally declared mentally incompetent and your farm turned over to another of your male relatives. Is there anyone else who can better look after your interests?
Give it all to my nephew. At least he'll let me stay in my own land, I hope.
Meet me down at the courthouse in the morning. I can't promise anything, but I'll do what I can to see that you have some justice in this matter. My sympathy for your losses, all of them.
Thank you, Judge.
Elizabeth, what are you doing with those scissors?
Father, let me help you. I'll cut the laws that are unfair to women out of your law books.
You can't do that.
Yes, I can. I have very sharp scissors.
You must change unfair laws, not cut them.
How do you change laws?
It's a bit difficult to explain. On a certain day, called an election day, men go to the polls and vote. They vote for legislators. The legislators are allowed to make laws. They create laws that the men like, and that way they are reelected.
I'll stop them from doing that. When can I vote?
Women can't vote.
Women could learn how to vote. They could learn in school.
It's against the law. If a woman tried to vote in an election, she would be arrested and go to jail.
If voting is a good thing for men, then why is it a crime for women?
Because women have to achieve the right to vote.
When I grow up, I'll make sure women can vote and I'll change the laws that make them cry.
It won't be easy. It's hard work to change things. You can't win the right to vote by racing around with scissors in your hand. It will take a lot of thinking. The best way to begin is to go upstairs, climb into bed, and dream about it.
I'm going to bed this very moment.
This world is changing already. Miss Elizabeth is going to bed without a fuss on behalf of women's suffrage. An excellent beginning.
Suffrage. What a pretty word. I'm going to remember that word.
I'm sure you will.
That poor old woman changed the world and never realized she had. I never learned if she had been able to save her farm. Men never spoke of such things to women. We lived in such separate worlds then. The men had the world of power, politics, law, and commerce. Women, the world of powerlessness, charity, children, and culture. Everyone tried to keep the world of men and women separate, but that would prove to be difficult.
Elizabeth, I heard you storming through the hall. Cease running and walk nicely. Your cheeks are flushed. It mars your beauty.
If Mother comes looking for me, tell her you have work for me.
Why are you hiding from your mother?
Oh, sewing circle day. I hate sewing circles. I rebel against them. I beg you, join my insurgency.
You must not shirk from your duty to others. Your mother says the factory girls are very grateful for the warm clothing you sew for them. Keep that in mind.
Yes, those poor girls are grateful. In fact, they are entirely too grateful. Those factories are freezing. Why aren't they paid enough to buy their own clothing? Why must they work so hard and yet depend on our charity to exist? Can't you do anything for them? You're a judge. Give those poor girls justice.
Elizabeth, I'm really quite busy. If you want to sit back and complain about the world, then go and talk to your mother. She has far more patience than I do for that sort of thing.
If you want me to be useful, then give me something to do.
Please copy these speeches to give to your brother when he comes home from college. These are the best closing arguments before a jury I have heard.
These are speeches. They seem rather like notes.
Those speeches convinced a jury, and that's what's important. A good speech is one that reaches into the heart of each and everyone listening. In a speech, always be direct, to the point, and dramatic.
Shall I read them out loud to you as I copy them?
No, I'm leaving. I'm going down to the train station with your mother to greet your brother when he arrives home. I haven't seen my son in 6 months. We'll be back shortly.
Goodbye. Oh, well, I best start being useful. Gentlemen of the jury. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury. That sounds better. Dare I write it? Oh, Libby, no. Be proper. Be a proper lady. Don't make a fuss.
Is anyone home?
Who's there? Is that my dear brother? All the way from the university? I'm in the library.
Where is everyone?
They just left. They all went down to the train station to meet you. You didn't see them.
I walked up the back way, through the fields. It was pretty.
Why are you here so soon? You weren't due back until this evening.
I took the early train. I didn't think they would all go looking for me.
Of course they would. You're their only son. 5 daughters, what a disappointment. A son, what a joy.
I don't feel the honor.
Someday, you will be giving speeches before the legislature, changing laws to make the world a better place. I know that's what you'll do. You'll be famous. I'd so love to help. I wish I could go to college.
Perhaps we could trade places. You go to college and study law, and I'll go to the Ladies' Academy and study poetry.
That would be cause for notice. Brother, please, before anyone returns, I need to ask you a question, completely in confidence. You must not repeat this to anyone.
Really? If it means this much to you, I promise. Not a word. Tell me what's troubling you.
I was with Mother Sewing Circle. She spoke of you coming home. I overheard one of the women whisper to another. It must have broken Judge Katie's heart. Only one son survived to adulthood. His other sons died and all his daughters lived. How much better it would have been the other way around. Do you think that's true?
Father's disappointed that we girls lived and our brothers didn't.
Don't be ridiculous. Father loves all his children. I don't understand why you are even questioning that.
I know he loves me, but in the same way he'll love a kitten. Give it some cream, let it sit there next to you and purr. With you, a son, it's so different. Why can't it be that way with me?
You are spending too much time in this house. You're melancholy. That's so unlike you. You need some exercise and fresh air. Ride down to the train station with me. Surprise them trying to surprise me.
Soon afterward, he came home to die. My father nearly collapsed as he watched his last remaining son in his illness. I went into the large, darkened parlor to see my beloved brother in a casket and my father seated beside it. We both sat in silence, he thinking of the wreck of all of his hopes. I wondered what could be said or done to fill the void in his heart. At length, he heaved a sigh and said, "Oh, my daughter, how I wish you were a boy." Throwing my arms about his neck, I vowed, "I will try to be all my brother was." I came to understand my purpose in life, to become everything my father wanted my brother to be. How I would do that, I had no idea. But I would be special, as he had meant for his son to be special.
Hello there, Mr. Stanton. I'm Elizabeth Cady. I just wanted you to know how much I was moved by your speech about ending slavery. I heard you lecture in Rochester. I had to come tell you what an inspiration it was. I believe you will change the world for the better, sir. You're very extraordinary.
Thank you. I'm always happy to see young ladies with an interest in social concerns. I haven't experienced it all that much.
Oh, you should. We women are very intelligent. Well, I think so, at least. I may be the only one, but there it is. In fact, I was wondering if perhaps you would look at this speech I wrote. I thought of some points that might complement your own fine work.
You said you wrote this, Miss...
Cady. Elizabeth Cady. I'm very active in the anti-slavery movement myself. Not at home, just when I visit relatives. I feel I can express my own political opinions once I'm away from my father. I suppose you don't care about all that. There's no reason why you should.
This is quite good. It brings up some valid points. With your permission, I'll read it before my own lecture. Will you stay and listen to your own speech?
Oh, that's not possible. My chaperone is over there, in that carriage, waving frantically at me. It's my uncle. He's an abolitionist like you. He encouraged me to write the speech in response to your lecture.
Would you like to read this speech yourself, Miss Cady?
Oh, of course not. Public speaking is for, well, actresses, I suppose. It's not respectable for a lady.
Don't be so certain of that, Miss Cady. I know several women who speak well for the abolitionist cause.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. My father would be very opposed to that. I must go now, but please feel free to use that speech. Unless it's no good, in which case, burn it or something.
After this lecture series, I'm going to London. I've been elected as a delegate to the World Anti-Slavery Convention. With your permission, I could read your speech there.
Really? London? Mr. Stanton, after your lecture this evening, would you like to come to supper?
A young woman of 1840 wasn't expected to do anything out of the ordinary. Women of my age and social standing were treated like beautiful porcelain dolls. We were expected to be gazed at, admired, spoken of nicely, but never to draw attention to ourselves. So I did what any young woman of 1840 would do to become unconventional. I married an unconventional man. Only weeks after meeting him, I eloped with Henry Stanton, and we ran off together to London.
Wonderful. A world convention. I'll meet intellectuals from all over the world.
Of course you will, at dinner.
At dinner? But they're right here. Where's your assigned seat? I'll come join you.
I'm afraid you can't. The ladies of the convention are seated in the gallery.
In the gallery? Up there? Darling, I came to support you. There I won't be able to see you.
Please, darling, try to understand. We are engaged in so many floor fights already. It took 3 days to agree on an agenda. Be patient. Your turn will come.
I don't want to sit up with a group of ladies. I want to be here in the crowd with you. Look up there. Who is that lady in gray? There's a gentleman sitting next to her. What's he doing there?
Lucretia and James Mott. Lovely people. Go up and sit with them. They can keep you company.
She looks as dull as dishwater.
She's a Quaker, that's the point. You better go. The convention is starting. People will start to argue again if you stay here any longer. At least give us a chance to begin.
Yes, darling. I want to make you happy, so if ignoring me makes you happy, well then so be it. Excuse me, may I sit next to you?
Oh, why, of course, my dear. I'm Mrs. Mott. How does thee do?
I do thee well. I'm Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
Praise God from whom all blessings flow. We are very pleased to see our good friend Henry Stanton has married. Thou art welcomed among us.
This is Mr. Mott, whom God has gifted me as a husband.
May I ask why you are sitting up here with the ladies?
Mr. Mott comes upstairs to the ladies' gallery in solidarity. He feels it most unfair that lady delegates be separated and not permitted to publicly address the convention. He sits up here in silent protest.
And on occasion to have a nap. These conventions can be long.
My husband feels it is very unfair as well.
I so enjoy conventions, even when I am so wrongly abused. When I return home to Philadelphia and speak at meeting, everyone is so anxious to hear what has been decided. It gives us much guidance.
Do you speak in public?
Only when the spirit moves me, Mrs. Stanton.
Actually, the spirit moves thee quite a lot.
Mr. Mott, dost thou remember when the Holy Spirit moved me to speak at a public meeting in Rochester when we were first married? The crowd responded by burning down the church.
Ah, to be young again, Mrs. Mott, to be young again. They have begun. First speaker is Mr. Clarkson.
What's he saying? I can't hear him. We are too far away.
It's always hard to hear. If the speaker is gifted with a loud voice, only then is it possible. Otherwise, Mr. Mott and I sit and meditate upon the glory of God. Did thee bring thy needlework, Mrs. Stanton?
Please tell me I haven't come all the way to London to join another ladies' sewing circle.
Pardon?
I am most eager to hear of the work of the anti-slavery movement from all over the world, but Mr. Clarkson is a waste of my time unless he learns to project his voice properly.
'Tis so. Mr. Mott struggled valiantly to introduce a resolution to the floor allowing full participation of women in the convention. There was much debate, but it was voted down far too quickly.
Enlightenment comes to all at different times. To some it is slower than for others.
I don't understand why these men see so vividly the wrongs done to others and are so blind to the wrongs done to their own wives and daughters.
Oh, indeed. Mr. Mott and I pray most adamantly on the subject.
I'm wasting my time here. I've never been to London. Mrs. Mott, will you join me for a stroll instead?
An excellent suggestion, Mrs. Stanton. Mr. Mott, do you wish to remain here as a silent rebuke?
Of course. And as long as Mr. Clarkson has the floor, I'll have my nap. Ladies, enjoy your stroll.
Arm in arm, that resolute old Quaker and I strolled the streets of London to look at the monuments of the past and talk of the future. It was gratifying to hear all the thoughts I had dimly been aware of, so naturally and freely discussed. As we talked, we ceased being two ladies and became a movement.
I have felt that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. It's a gift of spirit we all must treasure.
The ladies work so hard in the anti-slavery and temperance movements. They struggle to improve the lives of others and never struggle for themselves. We never think to ask for our liberty.
This speaks the truth, and plainly indeed. It is an injustice.
Then we must be the ones to begin the struggle for equality for women. Someone must begin it. Why not us? Mrs. Mott, what are you doing? Why are you getting down on your knees in the street?
We must pray on this.
Mrs. Mott, people are watching.
If these should pursue such a course of action, to give liberty to women, the struggle will be long and hard. Perhaps not one in your lifetime, but it must be one. Please, Mrs. Stanton, give silence to this. Search your heart. Is this in your spirit or simply in your words?
I have never spoken of this to anyone, but I have thought of the rights of women since I was a little girl.
Then he has been called to this. Oh, what a joy, and yet a burden to know one's call so early in life. Now, help me up off my knees. Oh, I'm glad your soul-searching was a brief one. This is a dirty street.
Let us hold a convention for women's rights as soon as we return to the United States. The time for waiting is behind us. We have made our decision. We shall begin at once.
For our first action, we shall return and wake up my husband and tell him the world is about to change.
Mrs. Mott told me the truth, but I hardly listened to her then. Equality for women wouldn't be accomplished in our lifetime, but it had to be accomplished all the same. I didn't understand her. Perhaps I didn't want to. So much stood in our way, even among our loved ones. I sensed that if I could stand up to a man like my father, that I could stand up to any man. Time proved me correct.
Welcome home.
Father, Henry and I need to explain.
There is no need. One action speaks louder than words. Mr. Stanton, I'm sure you wrote a nice speech to read to me, but let us dispense with formalities and get to the heart of this case.
Judge Cady, before you continue, please understand I intend to save your daughter from a pointless life of giddy whirl of fashionable follies. It pains me to see a person of so superior a mind and heart do nothing for the wicked world's salvation.
Mr. Stanton, as much as you wish to impress me with your judgment of my daughter's abilities, I have cause to question the wisdom of a man who proposes to a lady a mere 2 weeks after meeting her.
When the girl is as exceptional as your daughter, I knew within minutes. I waited for her to make up her mind. That's the reason it took weeks.
In our hearts, time meant nothing.
Mr. Stanton, as you are aware, I am the father of 5 daughters. All my other daughters have been fortunate in their marriages. Their husbands are quite capable of supporting their own families in an excellent manner. I am concerned that you, sir, may prove to be the exception.
I earnestly hope first impressions are not lasting ones. Perhaps I am not to the status you expected, but I assure you that I have worked hard to achieve what I have.
Which is what, exactly?
My husband is a social reformer.
That appears more of a hobby than a profession.
I assure you, sir, I have achieved success on the lecture circuit. I am able to earn a living doing so.
How much is your income in, oh, say, a month's time?
Father, that is personal information that my husband need not share with you.
Why not? Thanks to your impulsive behavior, we're all family now.
I earn approximately $30 a month.
For a single man, living in boarding houses, budgeting carefully, it's possible to live on that amount.
Elizabeth has assured me that she can live on very little.
She can assure you of that because she's never actually had to do it.
My husband does not concern himself with money. He is above that. He is an idealist.
Mr. Stanton, you appear a decent enough fellow, and I hope you will allow me to speak frankly.
I expect nothing less from you, sir.
Good. In marriage, the man and woman become one person, and that person is the husband. Any wealth brought into that union is owned completely by the husband.
We came into this house to have you share in our happiness, not bicker over financial accounts.
I have no intention of turning any portion of my family's assets over to a vagabond, as well-intentioned as he may be.
You have no control over her. We are married. She is Mrs. Henry Stanton now.
We are all human and capable of error. I am cutting Elizabeth from all financial support, now and in the hereafter. I will have my will changed. Her portion of my estate will be left to charity.
Why are you doing this?
Because I know your impulsiveness. You would leap headfirst over a cliff to prove you could. You need someone to rescue you from your recklessness, and it appears I have that purpose in life.
Impulse!
impulsive, reckless. I refuse to accept that from you.
Mr. Stanton, hearing all this, you must be aware of how rash your actions were. I don't fault you completely in this matter. This marriage is a mistake, but mistakes can be corrected.
You can't put an end to my marriage.
It will keep a mistake from becoming a tragedy.
Judge Cady, I can assure you that if I were a fortune hunter, I would have chosen a more likely place to find an heiress than within the progressive reform movement. I regret your decision to cut Elizabeth off financially, but I will accept it. I love Elizabeth, and I'm willing to make adjustments in my occupation as soon as a better opportunity presents itself. We are leaving for Boston tomorrow. I have friends there. I'll make a search in that city for a more steady form of employment. I'll write when I have success.
Mr. Stanton, perhaps I misjudged you. Elizabeth, why don't you go for a walk while I get to know your husband a little better?
With a baby on the way, it was time for me to think of stability, not political upheaval. My father took charge, as he so often did. He made Henry his law clerk. When Henry passed the bar, my father arranged for him a position in Seneca Falls, where my father had business contacts. Years passed, and more children were born. Henry and I settled into the life my parents wanted for us. I was still a rebel, in my mind at least. I wrote long letters to Mrs. Mott, late at night when the children were asleep, until she came for a visit and our revolution began.
You boys are supposed to be napping. I hear you on the stairs. Back into your room now.
Elizabeth, how do thee be? It's so good to see thee again. At long last.
Mrs. Mott, I've been so looking forward to a visit. Welcome to Seneca Falls. I have friends coming. They have heard so much about you. They all want to meet you.
8 years since we were in London. Oh, my soul becomes on fire when I read your impassioned words.
I've been thinking, especially on Sewing Circle Day. I've concluded that there is only one way for women to gain freedom under the law, and that is...
Hello? Libby? Are you in the kitchen?
I'm here as well. So is Amelia.
We're in the front parlor. Mrs. Mott, I'd like to introduce you to my friends. Jane Hunt, Amelia Bloomer, and Mary McClintock.
I feel like I know you quite well. We've been reading your letters to Elizabeth.
Equal rights for women. You have converted me to the righteous cause.
Thank you, Mrs. Mott, for the letters that give us all something else to talk about besides what a dull little town our husbands have dragged us to.
Here is your mail. There was a letter from your husband, so I thought you would want it right away.
Amelia's husband is the postmaster of Seneca Falls.
How is Mr. Stanton? Still active in politics. I see him often in Washington.
Yes, he's there now, filing patents with the government on behalf of his clients. I expected him back 2 days ago. Ah, here's the explanation. Much excitement here in Washington. I've been chosen as a delegate to the newly formed Republican Party. Last night we celebrated our creation with a parade through Washington. I wish you were here to see it. Yes, Henry, and I wish you were home to see the children. The Lively Lads are organizing a new political party, third one so far. First was the Liberty Party, then the Free Soil Party, and now it's the Republican Party. Apparently my husband is a Republican now.
Sounds better than being a Free Soiler.
Does anyone want coffee? Oh, and there's cake.
Speak more of this, dear. I remember when thee was enthusiastic about thy husband's ideals.
Yes, when I knew what they were. Now I just envy his freedom. He is free to come and go as he pleases. Believe it or not, there was a time when I found that charming.
Mrs. Stanton, thee felt a calling. If this be true, the time and place matters not. I believe thee called to struggle for women's rights. Create thy own political party right here in Seneca Falls.
It's impossible. Politics is for Washington or Albany. None of us can leave our families.
Where the spirit is, there shall be the action.
How could we do such a thing?
We don't know how to begin.
We should hold a meeting. Yes, a political meeting. Men have them all the time.
No. The first thing the Women's Equal Rights Party needs is a leader, a president of the party.
What about your husband? Mr. Stanton is sympathetic to the plight of women.
We will have his support, but let's wait until this Republican Party of his falls apart and he will look for another flag to wave. Probably no more than a couple of months.
I presume to speak for my dear husband and assure you Mr. Mott will be honored to be the president of the Women's Equal Rights Party.
How wonderful of him. That's settled. Now what?
I don't know.
We'll model ourselves after the anti-slavery convention I attended years ago. It was informative. Well, it would have been if I'd been able to hear. We'll put everyone on the same floor. It will be such an improvement.
I'll put a notice in my newspaper. What shall we say?
It will be a meeting to discuss the social, civil, and religious conditions and the rights of women.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Everyone will come. Our friends, at least.
Who is that little man on the porch? Is that Neil missing his nap?
Mama! How do you train a cat to swim? I don't think I did it right.
What do you mean?
When a cat falls off a ledge, it lands on its feet. So when it falls off a bridge, it'll start to swim.
Neil! You didn't throw Mr. Fluffy into the creek.
I want him to learn a new trick.
This meeting of the Women's Equal Rights Party is temporarily adjourned.
Oh my goodness, look at her run!
She pulled up her skirts to her waist. Petticoats are flying. I've never seen a lady run like that before.
She has him. She saved Mr. Fluffy. She pulled him out of the creek.
I believe we have found a leader. If Elizabeth Stanton can rescue the cat, she can rescue us as well.
We had no knowledge of politics before we began. We followed our hearts to do what was right. Would that be enough? I knew that it would be. I was only the first one to think so, but not the last.
I can't make heads or tails of any of this. We demand laws be changed, but we can't read law books.
Our Equal Rights Convention is just a week away, and we don't know what we are presenting. This will be a disaster.
We can't change the date. It's been published in the newspapers. It's all anyone is talking about. They will come, and we will have nothing to tell them.
There's plenty to say. We just don't know how to say it. Put together a political party? We just as easily could put together a steam engine. Mr. Stanton will be coming with Elizabeth. He's an attorney. Perhaps he will make sense of all this.
Oh, there they are. Mr. and Mrs. Mott are with them.
Good morning, ladies. How goes your fine work?
We are relieved you are here.
Mr. Mott, are you aware that you are the president of the Women's Equal Rights Party?
I am both honored and mystified. What will be my responsibilities on thy behalf?
We're not quite sure yet.
We assume you will be on the platform, presiding over the meetings and reading all the speeches.
Is there a reason why the ladies will not read thy own speeches?
Why would we do that?
If thou wast moved to write words, then be moved to speak those words as well.
It doesn't matter who reads the speeches, as there are none to read. We have no speeches written at all.
We must think of this audience as if they are a jury and we are pleading a case. A good speech is one that is direct, to the point, and dramatic. It must reach into the heart of each and everyone there. I had an idea. Here is a copy of the Declaration of Independence. What if we were to create a declaration of sentiments patterned after it? Isn't that what we are doing? Declaring our right to self-determination?
It is clever. Controversial, but certainly makes your point. And down to one page.
I wrote a list of resolutions, 12 in all, just as in the Declaration of Independence. We will read each specific resolution out loud and everyone will vote to approve them.
Excellent. Let us look at these resolutions.
I will need your support for the 9th resolution. It will be the most difficult to explain. We must resolve that it is the duty of women of this country to gain their sacred right to the elective franchise.
Elective franchise? What does that mean exactly?
You mean suffrage, the right to vote?
Mrs. Stanton, hast thou lost thy presence of mind?
Thou shalt make us ridiculous.
Why didn't you discuss this with me? You have no idea how this will be received.
I'm very well aware of how it will be received, but I see no other path for us to follow.
The path to follow? Making this entire effort a laughingstock? That's your path?
Mr. Stanton, may I see you for a moment alone?
Of course, Mrs. Stanton.
You came here to support me.
Support what exactly? A women's right to vote? Do you know how that would look?
Please. I have been around politics all my life. Power is not a gift that is simply handed out to the deserving. Women must be able to vote. There is no other way.
Of course there is. Have you forgotten? I am in the midst of a campaign for a seat in the New York State Legislature.
I know you are. I write your literature. I praise you to the skies. I support you in every way I can at home, alone with the children, because you are in Washington, New York, or Albany. I need a train schedule to find you.
We agreed. This is a world that sorely needs changing. I can affect change only if I win political office. I can't win if everyone thinks my wife is a lunatic.
Even if elected, you may well be our only champion in the legislature. Yes, it may be that in the future your glorious Republican Party will be the leaders in the struggle for women's rights. But until that day, I would like to consider other possibilities. That possibility is allowing women to have the right to vote.
Don't raise your voice. They'll hear you in the next room.
I'm aware that by insisting on women's right to vote, I'll be a figure of ridicule. Don't make it any worse for me. I need a gesture of public support from my husband.
I'll give you as much support as I can, no more than that. Write anything you want, but I won't risk my own position publicly defending it.
Everyone is waiting. At least pretend to agree with me. It is the very least you can do. Hello, everyone. Let us continue.
Let me see the document further. There is no need for further discussion on the issue of women's suffrage. It should stay in. The attendees to the conference can decide at that point if it remains.
Does thou truly feel this way, Mr. Stanton?
I'll be happy to work with you in creating this document, but on the day of the conference, I'll be unable to vote one way or another on the resolution. I'll be in Albany.
He needs to campaign.
All must do what they have been moved to do. Thou seek the same result. Thy approach is more practical, thy wife's approach more creative.
Shall we begin at the beginning? First resolution. Now this could be more concise.
On July 19th, 1848, we gathered outside the Wesleyan Chapel in Seneca Falls. I stood on those steps and saw nearly 100 individuals, both men and women, coming up Fall Street. It was then that I knew we had been heard. The newspapers were outraged, and we were all denounced all over the country. I was delighted. I would rather be hated than ignored. Shortly after our convention, another quiet moment that changed the world occurred, and our struggling social movement gained its most important convert.
Libby, over here. Libby, I have someone you must meet. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, I am pleased to introduce you to Susan B. Anthony. Susan is the president of the American Women's Temperance Union. She created it.
Sadly so. I had little choice if I wished to be heard.
I've heard so much about you. The newspapers are in a frenzy about you. You're known for shutting down saloons. Do you know how many open up again as soon as you leave town?
Libby, please.
Excellent question, Mrs. Stanton. Yes, we labor in a hard field.
It's because you don't have the law on your side. You must depend on moral persuasion alone. It's powerful, but it wears off quickly. Men might indulge you, but they don't respect you. You have no political power to enforce what you do, and it's what really matters.
An interesting conclusion to my work.
I only tell you this because I'm the daughter of a judge. I know the world of men and their laws.
Don't be so rude. She's my guest.
I do not mind. Mrs. Stanton, I cannot discuss it now. I have a meeting to address this evening. Amelia, have you extra chairs? When I arrived in town, I looked at the hall. I would like more chairs to be set up.
Susan, we won't need extra chairs. There are 40 of us in the Temperance League, and we have already set out the exact number of chairs.
There must be more. I took the liberty of printing some flyers before I arrived. I will post them up myself.
The members won't approve of that. If you put up flyers, we'll have people we don't know attending. Most of the membership is against having strangers here. You never know what they'll say.
How do you increase your numbers?
We don't.
I prefer to speak to a larger audience. I have no interest in preaching to the converted. Please, make public the news of my arrival. I flatter myself in thinking I am notorious enough to gather together at least the curious. Mrs. Stanton, I hope to add you to our numbers.
If one wishes to remove the tree of injustice, one must remove the roots, not just the branches. Rather than recruit me to your cause, I'd prefer to recruit you to mine.
I will give it due consideration, Mrs. Stanton. Let's meet after my speech, and I will allow you to try to convert me. I will speak to you later this evening. Good day.
Look at her march away like a little soldier. I don't doubt she gives Mr. Anthony cause for concern.
There is no Mr. Anthony. Susan is a spinster.
She is. A spinster. She isn't all that unattractive, if a man prefers a sensible sort of woman.
She chooses to be one. She had marriage proposals, but turned them down. She preferred not to marry.
Really? I'm becoming very intrigued by your Miss Anthony. We did talk that night, and for 40 years afterward. Whenever I saw that stately Quaker girl come striding across my lawn, head up and shoulders back, I knew the sons of Adam were to be set on their ears by one of our appeals or resolutions. I was the better writer, she the better critic. She supplied the facts and statistics, I the philosophy and rhetoric, and together we have made arguments that have stood unshaken through the storm of long years, arguments that no one has answered to this day.
Mrs. Stanton, you have been called by the newspapers the most dangerous woman in America. But I haven't received any new writing from you in weeks. You are lagging. I am demanding that you remain here, upstairs, and write until you are dangerous again.
Susan, I apologize, but please understand. I have 7 children. They also demand my efforts, far more consistently than you do. I see you perhaps once a month. I see them every day.
Those of you who have the talent to do honor to poor womanhood have all given yourself over to baby-making and left poor brainless me to do the battle alone. It is a shame such a body as I might be spared to rock cradles. But it is a crime that you, Lucy Stone, and Antoinette Brown should be doing it. I am traveling from one meeting to another because there is no other woman to be had. I do not mind, as long as I have your words to speak. You move the audience. I merely stand in front of it. For the next few days, I will stir the pudding, and you stir the country. You forge the thunderbolts, and I will fire them.
Are you sure I'm not needed downstairs?
Hard as it is for you to believe, I can run a household as well as any married woman. I will go downstairs now and prepare supper, and you stay upstairs and work. I read the draft you are writing for the New York State Legislature in support of a petition to add a woman suffrage amendment to the state constitution. Please, finish it. I can arrange for it to be heard. Yet I must tell you now, I cannot deliver it.
You think it wrong, what I'm writing?
No, far from it. Your speech is brilliant. That is why I cannot give it. You would be the first woman to address the New York State Legislature. It has to be you. I know these men from my days campaigning for temperance. They think I am a one-trick pony, and they've seen my trick. I have lost my novelty. I'd give this speech to a mostly empty chamber. Oh, yes, the eccentric Miss Anthony with yet another bee in her bonnet. But you are the most despised woman in America. You will fill the room like no one else could. They will all come to ridicule you. They will see instead a mother of 7 children, the daughter of a judge and the wife of a fellow legislator. They will stay and hear a speech that will touch the heart of each and every one of them.
I can't do that.
What on earth are you so upset about? This is your chance. I thought you would be delighted.
You don't understand. It was to be my brother who did this, not me. This wasn't meant for me. My brother was brilliant, and he understood me better than anyone ever did, ever could. He would have addressed the legislators for me. He would have done it, but he died. He's gone, and there is no one left.
There is you.
If your brother was here in spirit, what would he be asking for you to do?
To take his place. I know that. It's just hard. But yes, he would want me to do this. In 1854, I prepared my first speech before the New York legislature. I was nervous. My father felt equally nervous. He summoned me home to read my speech to him. Late one evening, when he was alone in his library, I entered and took my seat on the opposite side of his table. On no occasion before or since was I ever more embarrassed. An audience of one, and that one whose approbation I most desired, whose disapproval I most dreaded. I knew he condemned the whole movement and was deeply grieved at the active part that I had taken. I was fully aware that I was about to address an unsympathetic audience. After I had finished, I was amazed to see tears in his eyes. I cannot express the exultation I felt. I believe that he could at last see what I saw.
Surely you have had a happy, comfortable life. Yet that speech fills me with self-reproach. How can a young woman so well brought up, who has had no bitter personal experience, feel so keenly the wrongs of her sex? Where did you learn this lesson?
I learned it here, in your library, when I was a child, listening to the complaints women made to you.
You made your points clear and strong. But I think I can find you laws even more cruel than those you have quoted.
My father took several books from his shelf and turned to pages which contained laws he knew to be unjust. It was 1 o'clock in the morning before we said our goodnights. It was one of the happiest moments of my life. His approval finally gave me the confidence to make that speech and hundreds of them later. Every speech was a struggle, but the struggle became easier. Until we came to a hot night in Tennessee, decades later.
Amazon Brigade. Good night, ladies. Good night, ladies. We're bound to see you home.
How delightful. The chosen representatives leaving the same time we are. They've been drinking.
Just pause here a moment and let them leave before us.
Wait, that young man with them. He's turning around. I think he's coming to talk to us. If he gives us trouble, I'm going to give it right back.
Harriet, no, don't respond to provocation. It will all be over in a few hours.
Good evening, ladies. I'm Representative Harry Burns.
We know who you are. Well, it is late, and we don't want to keep you from your entertaining.
Folks have been giving speeches back home. They say if women achieve the vote, they will start leaving their homes. Powerful thing to abandon your babies.
I sincerely hope no one in your district would believe such a lie.
Mr. Burns, my mother was Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She had 7 children. I personally assure you, we were all raised hale and hearty.
When folks were saying it different, well, it got my whole district riled up.
Mr. Burns, will you vote the feelings of your district or your own?
I don't rightly know, Mrs. Cat. I got this note from my mother yesterday. Here, read it to your friends.
Dear son, hurrah and vote for suffrage. Don't keep them in doubt. I noticed some of the speeches against. They were bitter. I've been watching to see how you stood, but have not noticed anything yet. Don't forget to be a good boy and help Mrs. Cat put the rat in ratification. Your loving mother.
Your mother is asking you to support us?
Yes, madam. I can't say how I'll be voting. I hope there'll be others changing. It isn't all on me. I best go. It looks like the others are waiting for me. I'll write my mother and tell her I spoke to you.
Of course you should. I can see what a devoted young man you are. She raised you well.
Nice of you to say, madam. Y'all have a pleasant evening.
He is so young. His first term in office? Can he stand up to the pressure from his own party's leadership?
All we can do is pray that for women in this country, that Harry Burns listens to his mother.
Yeah, 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 yeah. The state legislature from the sovereign state of Tennessee is now in special session. Before this body is the ratification of the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Voice vote only. Senator Allen.
No.
Senator Barnes.
Hell no.
Senator Carter.
Yes.
Senator Turner.
Yes.
Senator Turner, are you sure about that, Brandon?
You heard me the first time. Yes, and leave me the hell alone.
Senator
Turner, a supporter of women's rights, he wouldn't speak to us, and he never seemed sober.
Senator,
he's his own man, and no one knew how he was going to vote.
Still, one vote. We need one more vote.
Senator Burns. Senator Burns? Senator Burns.
Yes.
Would you, repeat that, please, Senator Burns?
Yes. I hereby vote yes for the ratification of the 19th Amendment of the United States Constitution.
What the hell are you doing, boy? You voted the wrong way. You voted to allow women to vote.
I desire that my party in both state and nation might say that it was a Republican from the East Mountains of Tennessee who made the national women's suffrage possible. I appreciate the fact that an opportunity seldom comes to a moral man to free 17 million women from political slavery, and that opportunity is mine.
Our time grows short, but before you go, as I review my life, its marches and battles on the road of experience, I count my defeats and victories, how often one led into the other. John Adams once wrote that during the American Revolution, a third of the population fought for liberty, a third fought against it, and the final third were utterly indifferent. Only after the revolution was won was there unity in its righteousness. I pray this shall be the conclusion to our revolution as well. In my time on earth, I served my purpose. I and a few dear friends heard the clarion notes of the coming revolution. It is now up to you and future generations to continue the struggle to make ours a more just world.
You've been listening to Dangerous Women, a production of WYSO and the Living History Theater. This program is dedicated to the life and memory of Caroline Elizabeth Welton. Dangerous Women was written by Kay Reimers, directed by Dan Davis, and produced by Jerry Kenney. Sound assistance by Catherine Tilley. Our online content was compiled by David Neely and Juliet Fromholt. Our cast included Miriam Eckenrode, Doug Hinckley, Marcia Nowick, Troy Lindsay, Flo Lorenz, Dion Greenberg, Howard Shook, Chris Hammond, Elizabeth Lutz, Gina Breeza, Allie Thomas, and Rob Campbell. Also appearing, Jason Syme, Dan Davis, Sarah Strong, Mary Kay Clark, Micah Lindsay, Mason Lindsay, and Gary Reimers. Music performed by the Victory Orchestra and Dave Greer's Classic Jazz Stompers.